What is up, everybody? We got a lot to talk about today. 53-man roster is here for the Chiefs. Practice squad is filling out. They claimed a couple guys, so we got some new players. The Broncos are coming to town very soon, so real football is right on the way, and we're going to get into all that and more on today's episode of the Chiefs Collective right after this. Apparently, there's a delay on StreamYard and there's not on the streaming software I use. So if I always cut off my last word, it's because I have no patience and I need to trigger the intro a second later. But what is up, everybody? I'm Cole with How About Those Chiefs, joined as always by Nate Taylor of ESPN and Mitchell Schwartz, all pro, former right tackle, the Chiefs Super Bowl champion, all that stuff. By the way, who is doing film breakdowns left and right here. You broke down some film on Diego Pounds, the offensive tackle the Chiefs traded for just prior to cut down day. And you liked what you saw, didn't you? At least initially.
I did. Yeah, it was impressive. I was kind of watching it for the first time. I went back and watched the first couple of games and there's like nothing really that instructive to watch. They just ran a bunch of nakeds and like easy stuff. And turns out watching game three was actually the one to watch. Now, to be fair, I mean, and I said this, like the competition wasn't the most amazing and he was still, you know, playing in the third and fourth quarters of game three of the preseason. So there's your kind of context right there. But from what I saw, all looked fantastic. Moves well, good technique. He's got, you know, some of the detail stuff down already for an undrafted rookie. That's really impressive. And hopefully that, you know, translates as he moves up a depth chart.
I will say real quick, the second play on your film breakdown when the running back tries to hurdle, gets hit, and does a front flip, I laughed so hard and I couldn't even focus on anything else. I was like, when is Mitch going to point out this front flip? And you did eventually. You're like, oh, wow, look at that. It was so funny.
Dude, O-linemen don't watch that stuff. Like,
no, right.
There's so many times that we have to be told, like, hey, watch what, you know, Pat did here. Like, watch this no-look pass. Like, we just don't watch quarterbacks where the ball goes. Like, we're just so focused on O-line stuff. So it usually does take me a while to find kind of the funny little Easter egg things.
Nate, there's been a lot going on. What was your initial takeaway? I guess we could talk Diego Pounds if you want, and just O-line real quick before we process. We won't go 53-man roster position group by position group, just high-level takeaways. But what did you make of the trade? Because we've had two trades now for offensive linemen, Joshua Zudu from the Giants, Diego Pounds from the Ravens. And we're still maybe not 100% sure the status of Josh Simmons at this point for week one. I don't know one way or another, but any updates you have on that and any thoughts you have on the state of the O-line as we get ready for week one?
Yeah, it's nice to be through cut down day because it's such a long day and it's obviously so pivotal for, you know, so many players is, you know, careers and lives, but it is nice to have an idea of like, okay, this is what the initial roster is. This is what it's like to have the Chiefs do multiple trades, right? I understood that they were probably going to do one. It was nice of them to do it or for them to get the agreement on, you know, the time that we were doing our last episode, which was really cool to sort of break that down and in real time. But also I was surprised that based on talking to a number of people in the organization, like, hey, we really need to reset the depth on our offensive line and we don't want to wait for the waiver. So like, if we can just send you anything in 2028, please. And so as I reported, it's a conditional 2028 sixth round pick in 2028, excuse me, for Diego Pounds. And so this is a long-term sort of play. He's an undrafted, you know, rookie, like Mitch said, and appears to be on a similar trajectory to Khalil Benson. So one of the, I think, the fascinating things about the roster construction as a whole is I was really concerned about, like, hey, are they going to get nine offensive linemen? They actually chose more offensive linemen than running backs. Like, I think the biggest thing that I could take away from it that I didn't necessarily anticipate on Sunday was not having DeMarcado on the roster. He's now with the Dallas Cowboys, if people are wondering. And knowing that you have 10 offensive linemen and three of them are guys that were not a part of the roster essentially last year, when you include Khalil Benson into all of this, and he might be playing on opening night against the Denver Broncos. My understanding is Ozudu is a guard and Pounds is a tackle. So Khalil Benson probably still has the best flexibility of the three, where he could go into guard, I guess, in a pinch, but he will probably still be working mostly at tackle, is my understanding. So you have your bookends there with Benson and Pounds. Azudo's probably going to be learning from Mike Caliendo at the guard position. Hunter Norzad most likely is your backup center, which is what I've been calling for the last few weeks. And to know that Josh Simmons went to go seek medical expertise is the best thing I can say. The easiest, the most simple way I can say it is, hey, go get your medical expertise on, see what you find out. He was not with the team on Friday, based on my understanding. I did not see him at Arrowhead. And so Andy Reid did give us a slither of an update of, hey, he's a hard worker. He's taking his time. As we've talked about before, he has the time to do this now. The Chiefs still don't play a football game for another 12 days. You know, if you're hearing this in the podcast version. But yeah, I don't know if Josh Simmons is going to be in uniform on opening night. So there's that. I am now wise enough to know that, yes, I understand what I said a couple weeks ago, which is like, hey, if it was a game week, he'd be out there, he'd be playing, he's fine, the team's not overly concerned. Most of those things are still true, but I understand if Josh Simmons is learning more about the severity of his back injury and if he's not comfortable to play on opening night, or if he's not allowed, you know, if he's not able to practice. I think if you're a Chiefs fan, the team will not practice in like true game week preparation for the Broncos until next Thursday. If he not practicing the next Thursday or Friday, not a good sign. But until then, we really don't know. And I don't know if we would get a sizable update that like would necessarily change my overall understanding of it. So the Chiefs are hopeful. They're optimistic. Again, I don't totally know what's wrong, Cole, to say like, well, if it's a game week, he'd probably be out there. But at the same time, it's not a game week. And so everyone just circle their calendars for, as I look here, September 10th. If he's practicing on September 5th, everything's fine, guys. If he's not practicing on September 5th, he might not be in uniform on September 14th.
Okay, so for clarity, September, they're practicing Thursday, Friday, Saturday of next week. That's like the three injury report days. So
because it,
Thursday
because
the 10th.
Yep, okay, because
it's Monday night.
Because it's a Monday night game, every team in the league generally does this where they just move the days up because you're on a sort of longer week. And then, of course, they go back to a shorter week coming out of the Monday night game, getting prepared for, you know, the Indianapolis Colts. At some point, fellas, we will have to really understand the nature of this because you can't really have your left tackle miss multiple games. And if it's an IR situation, then, like, why didn't he start the season on IR? He's not on IR. He's not on any designated list. He's not on a PUP list. So, like, he is available. We just need to know when he's going to practice. I don't know when that's going to be. But the hope is, if you're a Chiefs fan, to protect Patrick Mahomes as best possible, you would like to have your starting left tackle be on the practice field Thursday, Friday, Saturday of next week.
Mitch, I'm going to pass it right over to you. But real quick, we are starting to do these. We've done two now. Q&A episodes on Friday. So Super Chats is where we kind of answer those and any questions I see from the live stream or the comments. So if you have a question based on what we're talking about today, leave it down in the comments and we will try to address that in more detail on Friday. But Mitch, if you were the O-line coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, how would you be trotting people out there week one? I mean, if Simmons plays, it makes it easy. But if there's a chance he doesn't, they've kind of moved Khalil Benson all around. So based on what you've seen, how would you go about it? I mean, I'm assuming Diego Pounds, all these new guys, like they're just not ready yet. And I don't even know if that's the plan anyway to have these guys next man out there by any means. But how would you go about it?
Yeah, so there's the Josh Simmons being healthy lineup, which is Josh at left tackle, and I put Jalen Mort right tackle. the Josh Simmons not healthy. I would probably put Jalen at left tackle and Benson at right tackle just because Benson's had a lot more reps there. Historically, Jalen has had a lot more reps there. Now, this year, he does seem to be a little bit more comfortable at right tackle. I think I did a little like five-play film review of that preseason game three of Jalen that'll probably drop in the next couple of days just to see what he's looking like at left tackle right now. Again, they had one drive. It was like five or six plays, and you know, a couple of those plays were worthless. But it wasn't the greatest opportunity to kind of see where guys are at and what they're kind of looking like at the different spots. So I don't know. I mean, it's just it's hard. I've only seen those, or I think I might have misspoken, but I've only seen those few plays of Khalil Benson at left tackle. Like, I haven't seen a ton of Jalen at left tackle. I would say from that game, he looked more comfortable at right tackle as opposed to left tackle against Tampa in week two is what I was trying to say. So I don't know. It's just I just haven't seen Benson at left tackle at all. And I know in college he was more right tackle. So I would just lean with like what the guy has done more. And obviously at the beginning of camp, he was right tackle competing for the job, and then right guard when Trey was hurt, and then right tackle after, you know, the switch and switcheroo there. So there's just so much uncertainty. Like, we can kind of speculate on it. That was my takeaway kind of, sure, as Nate was talking, is just like, let's just wait the week. Let's see what Thursday next week looks like. And but it's fun to kind of like slot guys in. And now there's like, I feel like more promise from the younger guys and from the rest of the room than maybe we've had in the past, despite what the fan base thought of SL last year and the disappointment with letting him go originally. And then kind of the promise he showed the first game or two, he was back and playing. It's always a fluid situation, but guys definitely have their spots and kind of their ideal situations, but I do feel like there's maybe a little bit more flexibility too with Azudu being able to, you know, be slotted at kind of right guardish, but having played tackle spots before, and maybe he's a right side guy who's right guard, right tackle. Maybe Pounds is a left side guy who's left guard, left tackle. Ideally, guys can flip both sides, but it's really hard to do that. It's not as easy as just like, hey, go play the other side, as you know we've been talking about all season with Jalen Moore and the comfortability having a full year at right tackle. So I know we want to hit on DeMercado because we were talking, I mean, a few weeks ago, why isn't he getting more reps in practice? Why does he not get any more reps in games? It seems like he's kind of given like the Jet McKinnon treatment, even though he hasn't been here and he hasn't earned that ability. So maybe it was just that they thought he was the fourth running back all along. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Nate, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm still surprised because I'm just, you know, maybe I'm becoming more of a coach as I get older in terms of the thinking, but I would just prefer a veteran at least early in the season. And if things go a certain way, then you can obviously pivot. But I would always prefer the veteran who is, at least from what we saw in training camp, the best pass protector, not named Kenneth Walker, who could give you some, you know, contributions on third down. I think this is a big sign of the growth and the appreciation of Emma Johnson. His ability to make guys miss, his vision between the preseason opener and even against the Seattle Seahawks, I thought was noticeable. He can actually, and we've known this about him too, even going back to college at Nebraska, a very good pass catcher. So, like, there's no issues there. I just think the only thing that's going to matter is how quickly can he get comfortable with, like, hey, what a, you know, an overload pressure, a fire zone blitz. Like, you know, if it's...
So to jump in real quick, my question with DeMercado, is it the physical ability to block the guys, or is it the mental capability to know where to go when you're talking about him being the best pass blocking running back?
Yeah, I still think it's both. I think Johnson will grow into that role, but it was pretty clear that, like, hey, Jack Cochran's not in college. and he's going to muscle you a little bit. And, you know, of course, we've all talked about offensive linemen dying a slow death, but, like, it's hard for running backs to, I think, appreciate that part of the job. And, you know, it's different going from practice, obviously, to a game. So I'm fascinated to know who is the first running back off the field when Kenneth Walker comes off. I think it's Johnson. And then if you want to use Breshard Smith as, like, a guy who can sort of release out of the backfield, totally understandable as well, given he is, you know, he has so much receiving background throughout his career. I wonder, not only from a mental standpoint, but just like, can you get away with presenting Patrick Mahomes cover zero? Not because of Patrick Mahomes, I would say the answer is no, but because of the influx or the shifting nature of the offensive line. Again, how much of Vance Joseph's play calling design or his overall, you know, pressure script, how might that change without Josh Simmons? But also, like, if it's cover zero and you got to make a choice, like, hopefully you make the right choice. Or do we just put Ken Walker out there and say, hey, for at least a couple games, show the young guy how it's done, and then we can go and get, you know, through the teachable points throughout the course of the season, and then we can bring him along slowly. But I guess I'm just a little fearful because I don't want that blitz in the third quarter because of what we saw from a protection plan in the first half sort of be manipulated. And instead of it being Ken Walker or D. Mercado, it's Emmy Johnson. And that's the first real hit that Patrick Mahomes takes because, you know, you put a rookie out there on third down. I'm just a little worried about that. And I thought that was one of the reasons why, even though D. Mercado is, you know, a pretty standardized NFL running back, where his value would be most appreciated on the roster, considering you have DeMarco Murray and Eric Bieniemy, who are both former NFL running backs themselves.
Yeah, a couple thoughts for me. I mean, that was obviously a big surprise, especially with preseason game two. Look at all the third downs in the first quarter and maybe even partway through the second quarter, D. Mercado was out there on every third down initially. Mm-hmm. He was playing later, you know, later than even some of these other guys. But that was my first tell of like, okay, yeah, I think this is your third down back. That is, again, when Kenneth Walker needs to get off the field. The problem I was having when I was trying to do a numbers crunch for a final 53-man roster projection is when I made the assumption that they're going with 10 offensive linemen, three quarterbacks to protect Nussmeier, it was a crunch here. It's like, well, I went with three tight ends on my final, but you lose Jake Brenningstuhl when you do that. It seems like they did not want to risk losing Brenningstuhl, which is good for him. Maybe I don't know what to expect from him this year,
right?
But I know they like him a lot, and it was enough to not risk losing him to waivers. So my thought with D. Mercado was, I know it's a calculated risk when you waive somebody, but did they think they could sneak him through considering he signed in the offseason for essentially a vetmin deal? I mean, it was a $1.2 million deal, so I wondered if they thought they could maybe sneak him through. It didn't happen. Cowboys were pretty high on the waiver wire, maybe like middle of the pack-ish. And so, yeah, that was unfortunate because I was hoping at the very least you could sneak D. Mercado onto the practice squad. And if you had to early, call him up, elevate him for game day. Because, yes, the question for me is when Kenneth Walker is not out there, who is going to handle pass pro? But it tells me I feel like Kenneth Walker is going to be out there for most of these. That's my assumption. But my favorite idea of a third down back is actually Breshard Smith once he can handle pass pro assignments as a converted wide receiver with his speed. He's looking, I mean, Mitch can weigh in more on this, but he looks to me more like a running back than he ever has looking at him in these preseason games. But obviously with Breshard Smith, newly converted from wide receiver to running back 1 year in college, I don't know if he's going to be ready to handle that. I don't know who they're actually going to trust on third downs after Kenneth Walker. It'll be interesting to see. But I love the idea of maybe next year, unless they have to force it this year, Breshard Smith out there sometime just because of the former wide receiver and the speed that he offers.
Yeah, and I don't know that it has to be like third down specific. Like, I think, so if you want to get to like a whole different discussion, when you talk about offenses and balance and, you know, Coach Reed likes to be attacking all this stuff, like the whole 50-50 run-pass split, like that's not technically balance, right? That's balanced running and passing, but a truly balanced attack means on any given play, especially, you know, first and second downs and kind of earlier in those situations, I can do anything I want, right? I can do a run scheme, a draw scheme, you know, a power scheme, you know, all these different things from the run game. And in the pass game, I can also do a play action. I can, you know, hit a quick pass. I can throw a screen, a receiver screen. Like, so true balance is the ability to kind of do any of the things to attack all parts of the defense in the field at the same time. It's not just like half the time we have to run the ball, half the time we have to throw the ball. And so
sure.
if you have a running back who's able to be effective as a receiver, you know, there's the theory of that, and everyone loves talking about, well, this guy's going to be a weapon and they'll line him out wide. And like every single guy who's ever that's been said about, like, doesn't, they don't get lined up. McCaffrey's basically the only one.
Yes.
Like a converted receiver would be a guy that you can put out there and he can run legitimate routes and not just like a hitch or a go and trying to be, and you throw him a screen and like, otherwise he's bait. So that value to me is almost more on first and second down where he can do anything. He can be lined up at any spot. And if a defense is having to treat him as a running back, that can change the math and the numbers where all of a sudden you go from like, you know, say a traditional 11 personnel, which is one running back, one tight end, yep. and they put a certain sub package on the field. But then you line up and now you've got four legit receivers on the field and a tight end. And all of a sudden they got two linebackers out there who maybe aren't cover guys, and Kelsey can still cook, you know, linebackers. Now you've got a former receiver running back who can cook linebackers. Like, that's where I think his ability to do both becomes much bigger, because on third down, you're somewhat limited. Like third and eight, you're throwing the ball, and like yep. the Chiefs run a fair amount of, you know, empty protection where the running back gets out, but that's not really like a game plan schematic advantage in those situations, because you're also worried about blitzes and all this stuff. So I think that versatility and that ability is almost more valuable on first and second down. So yeah, I don't know what you guys think about that, but it's just like, if he can kind of truly be a little bit more of a receiving threat, then the idea of running backs who are receiving threats can be, and not just like, oh, we'll throw him a screen or two every now and again. Like, that legitimately can change numbers, can change concepts,
yes.
and can put a ton of pressure on the defense.
It reminds me so much of the 2018 offense that was a literal spaceship, because they would take Kareem Hunt and they would motion him out of the backfield. And he had demonstrated early in his career, to Mitch's point, that, hey, I can go down the seam and
first game.
it beat a linebacker. It was, I mean, that offense in 2018 is not, it's not real. It's not really repeatable for a number of reasons. When like, you know,
it's the lady on the airplane
yeah.
screaming back that
yeah.
back there is not real. Yeah, that's the 2018 yeah, offense.
When Sammy Watkins, your third passing option. but it does, like everything Mitch said reminds me of that. And again, if you can coach up Bashard and he already has a background, then yeah, it makes sense to also keep things simple for the defense. Like, hey, maybe we can't be as exotic because we can spread it out, or we can sort of be a little bit manipulative in terms of the personnel, to where, hey, maybe that does help the quarterback and the offensive line, because you know, the defense has to sort of be respectful of everything that is available to them.
And the other thing to that, if we again want to take it a step further, if you're going under center more, you know, there's a certain element of like a run and a play action that you can do from under center. Some of these teams are starting to get into a few like true kind of old school dropbacks from under center, which is, you know, the dying thing in the NFL. But as these teams are getting under center more, they're wanting to run, you know, traditional dropback passes. They're starting to do it more from under center in a way that they haven't done, you know, in the last yes. 20 years with all the shotgun. Well, if the Chiefs are getting under center more, and if he's a running back and he's lined up behind Patrick Mahomes, and then you kick him out into a receiver formation, and now you've got, you know, say a two tight end formation, old school, like two tight ends, three wide receivers, under center, empty behind the quarterback, like just taking dropbacks, running, you know, plays, that even changes the numbers way more than starting him out in shotgun and motioning him out, because yeah. there's still an element of like a shotgun offense is a little more pass heavy. You're still kind of preparing for that, especially the way the Chiefs run game has been the last 5 years. So if you're like establishing that you can do stuff under center, you can run, you can play action, and then you got this guy you yes. can motion out, quarterback still under center, taking 5-7 step drops, running, you know, full spectrum routes, like that is stuff to get extremely excited about. And that's stuff that like, that's what Andy Reid grew up on in the West Coast offense. Like that is the West Coast offense.
Yeah, that is so 1990s West Coast. Oh, remember they, I mean, now we're getting like into super nerddom, but like they used to come out with like two backs in the backfield under center, and then you'd get a shift. Like, now we're going to shift to a whole different formation. You'd be like, whoa, what is this? You know? And it was just yeah. so cool to or see having, like
under quarterback under center with two backs that are not behind him. They're both over yes. like the tackles.
Yes.
Which is like the number one formation from the West Coast offense, like day one install. So like,
yes,
you could see stuff like that. Like it might be a really fun blend of old school under center West Coast with new school with like shock, like the options, especially if he becomes qualified at being a running back and a receiver, like it's super exciting to dream about what that could be.
And I'll tell you, Cole, we've seen some two back sets That's in fun. Training camp. I don't know. These practices are public. So it's just an idea. We're not going to show you the real plays, but hey, there's two running backs in the backfield. I mean, hadn't seen that in a while. Now I'm not going to tell you which running backs are in there because, you know, but hey, it's definitely.
We've got a pretty good guess now.
There's only three.
Can't be too wrong.
but like we did see a version of that. Now, I don't know if it's the finished product that you're going to see from, say, I'll just create a date from like August 4th to September 14th. It could look very different, but like, hey, at least they were starting somewhere with two running backs as a part of the backfield in some capacity within the offense. So can all three running backs just stay healthy? I mean, that's like the thing that's hovering over.
The reality of the position is no. But ideally you're staying healthy for like, you know, you're injured for a few weeks at a time. The other two guys can kind of step up. Obviously there'll be more help at the position at some point, but to everyone's point, like in a perfect world, that fourth guy, whether he's on the active roster or the practice squad, is someone that isn't a rookie or isn't someone that, you know, hasn't really played ball and can step in. And again, as we keep saying, like all of a sudden one or two guys get hurt and the fourth running back is on the field and in big leverage situations and he needs to know the blitzes and the protections and all that. So yeah, in a perfect world, he would have got through. We would have been able to, you know, sign him back to the practice squad. But, you know, it's a tough position. And, you know, we're going to roll with the three guys we got. And as we just said, hope for the best health that we can get.
For right now, the practice squad is not completely filled out. They announced 12 signings to the practice squad last night. However, they also waived defensive tackle Marcus Harris, who I think we all agree earned a spot on the 53. Hopefully he clears waivers and is one of the practice squad additions and would, in theory, I think, be called up pretty early on, elevated for game day. And then they also waived cornerback Kevin Knowles, who I think should clear waivers as well. I like that you have both cornerback Kevin Knowles and Melvin Smith Jr. on the practice squad. But the reason I brought up the practice squad real quick is the only running back on there right now is Jaden Ott. So when you say, when you're talking fourth running back, at least for right now, that's who it is.
Yeah, no, I mean, and again, I jokingly said former Cal great, but has a ton of familiarity with the new running backs coach who coached them all last year. And when we got him, everyone was like, well, they don't like each other. So seems like they like each other okay.
Enough to stay around. And he chose to sign back to the practice squad. So before we switch to the defensive side of the ball when it comes to the roster and anything like that, was there any other offensive takeaways? I mean, I briefly mentioned Brenningstuhl.
Yeah.
Very happy for him.
Yep.
But any other thoughts you guys have on offense before we switch sides there?
I'm ready to look, man. I'm ready to see what Nico Remigio has, because it is one of my favorite times of the year where we literally get up in arms about the sixth wide receiver that you knew was the sixth wide receiver when camp began. When the preseason began and when the season began. And look, I mean, no one came close to beating Nico at a punt returner or as the most reliable kickoff returner. And so, hey, they still got Andrew Armstrong back. I would have loved to have shown him as a, you know, potential run blocker, but like, you know, that's going to be hard when Jalen Royals did enough in the preseason to, you know, solidify his spot. So that was the only thing else I had. I'm happy for Brenningstuhl because I just think maybe he can grow into someone who can be used quite a bit in the running game as a secondary option. And, you know, in terms of injuries, it's fascinating to know that, like, hey, we know running back position is a difficult position, but we're going to stick with three. Tight ends get hurt a lot too, guys. And Travis Kelce's an anomaly, and so he doesn't really count. And so they've kept three tight ends in the event that, like, hey, Jared Wiley's had injury history. We know, you know, Noah Gray hasn't been as productive as he would like over the last 2 years, so hopefully he can have a bounce back season. But they made the investment in Brittany Steele last year, and it's really cool for them to reward him in terms of, like, hey, he's probably going to be dressed. He's probably going to be playing on special teams. And the first chance for him to make, I think, a significant impact is probably as a pass blocker more so than a pass catcher.
I don't have a ton of thoughts on the rest of the roster. I do have a special teams thought since we're talking about Romeo.
Yeah.
I feel like the trust in the returner usually comes down to, like, either good decisions or the ability to catch the ball and not just, like, let it bounce and let it roll and stuff. And if a guy is able to catch the ball better than, you know, someone else who's maybe more explosive and gives more ability to run, I would actually be really curious if there's any data on what, like, one, you know, muffed punt turnover, how many yards you would need to gain from the rest of your returns being more explosive to, like, overcome the downside of one muffed punt that becomes a turnover. I mean, it's probably hard to quantify, like, how often a guy's catching a ball and how many yards it bounces for extra if, like, they don't track it well and they get indecisive. Or, like, for the most part, I mean, when I was there, I feel like we had guys who would fair catch the ball at the 4-yard line all the time. But we haven't really had that in the last few years. So just in terms of, like, what the data would actually say on how valuable, like, a guy who makes the right decisions, catches the ball, gets a few yards consistently versus a guy who's a little more volatile, because I feel like that's kind of the big discussion over his value, even though obviously he's doing more than just being a punt returner, like playing other special teams and all that. But you tend to think about and talk about the more forward facing position.
It's a really good point, because if you muff a punt, I mean, we saw Sky Moore do that plenty early on, but it completely can flip the game.
Correct.
The team
is turnover
instantly,
plus field position.
Correct.
Field position.
Yeah, they're instantly in the red area. And then I just recall one muff of Sky Moore in particular. It was inside the 10, and the other, I don't even remember what game it was, because it happened a few different times, but I mean, it was a touchdown.
That was right away. Yeah, that was the Colts. The Colts, they were in control of the game the entire time. I remember being in Indianapolis, and then the muff punt happened, and it was like, uh-oh, we got a game again. And that was the game.
Was that Matt Ryan?
Yeah, that was the Matt Ryan led Indianapolis
Colts. 12-7, disgusting loss.
Yes,
the franchise was over.
They lost that game. God, not that we need to go down memory road, but it was for three reasons: missed field goal, muff punt, and
penalty. Right, Chris Jones.
And Chris Jones saying the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Oh, it was that game?
Oh, yeah.
We still don't know what he said either.
We'll never know.
So it's all that to say, it feels like the floor in the return game is, can you 100% secure the catch? And they're happy with that. But yeah, you're obviously hoping for more out of Romeo. My final 53, it had Armstrong making it over Romeo, but I was like, this is hopium. I think Nico, there was no sign shown that Nico wasn't the guy as far as punt returner goes. But I was partially convinced, and we'll never know this, that he could clear waivers. But you never know. Other teams value returners. But yes, he did have a 7.8 yard per attempt average on punts last year, and you definitely hope that goes up, because that's bottom third of the league. And Dave Tobe is saying, hey, his vision's getting better. He's improving. You didn't really give anybody else opportunities, but, you know, I thought Breshard Smith could handle it. I haven't seen him, I don't think, muff a punt. I could be wrong off the top of my head. But hey, you know what? At the end of the day, Andrew Armstrong cleared waivers. I thought he did enough to earn a spot, but the reality is, I think one of you guys already said it, we're talking wide receiver 5-6. You're seven. Talking Andrew Armstrong being out there in some very select packages and then heavily contributing on special teams. And Dave Tobe has a couple of his guys that he gets to keep, and Nico Romeo was certainly one of them. We're going to switch to the defensive side of the ball here in a second, but I do want to give a shout out to the season-long partner of the channel, Prize Picks. I cooked up a few picks here that I want to talk about. I'll talk about that in a second, but this is America's number one sports picks app, available in most states: Kansas, Missouri, California, Texas, Florida, many others. You can set your lineup with individual game performances. They got season-long predictions as well. You can also select the winner, spread, or total on any game or fight. I'm a big UFC guy, so fights are a lot of fun to do that with. For this little three-legger, cooked up Xavier Worthy. I just feel more confident about the idea of Worthy being a bit more productive in this offense. I think I've lost a little steam of Rice. I still think he's going to get fed. I just, if Worthy can stay healthy, I liked more on his 649.5 receiving yards. And in Prize Picks, you can tease these stat lines down. So I teased AJ Brown's down to 749.5 with the Patriots. He had 1,000 last year with the Eagles. That felt safe. Aiden Hutchinson, another year removed from his injury. He had 14 sacks last year, so I hit more on 9.75. So that's a little three-legger I cooked up. But next week we'll do a game, Chiefs Broncos, and maybe I'll consult with both of you before we introduce that one next week. But if you want to join in on the fun, just make sure to use code HMA at signup to get $150 in bonus lineups if you win your first $5 plus lineup. Again, that's code HMA. Link is in the description. And I think after the stream, pin comment down below. With that, unless you guys have any other thoughts, we could go defense and just process through. I mean, because there was two guys claimed on the waiver wire, and we knew they needed to add at the D-line when they only rolled with four defensive tackles and four defensive ends. Although they got the veteran, Emmanuel Ogba, onto the practice squad, which it made a lot of sense to me in that regard. But do you have any initial thoughts on the guys that were claimed, even though it's very new and maybe we haven't seen a ton of film yet on them?
Yeah, it's very new, but at least they're SPAG specific. Like, okay, you do this, I'll find a way to use that. Now, who knows if it'll be used in September or if it'll be later in the season. I always like to say that Steve's very experimental in the early part of the season, and then he gets really, really specific as the season goes along, as he gets a better understanding of his players and his personnel. Obviously, you would hope everybody would stay healthy. But, yeah, just love the idea of, like, well, this guy, I mean, he could play at LSU, but he could play for us.
So that's defensive end Jack Pyburn, who was with the Bucks.
Yes.
And interesting, he was the defensive end Trey Watson blocked in the end zone to allow Emmett Johnson's lone touchdown. But he had some other flashes.
Ethan Driscoll.
Was it Ethan Driscoll?
It was a double team. The tight end's getting all the credit when the tackle's the one doing the majority of the work.
Hey, it's based on who pushes off last, bitch. You know that. Like, I pushed the defensive end or the linebacker last, and he fell, you know, 2 yards back, so it's on me.
I need to not weigh in about any O-line talk. I'll just tell you that much. That's why I tell Mitch, I'm like, you need to do the film breakdowns for every single game within reason, player, any fan that says this guy had a bad game. Like, Mitch, I need your help to correct this. But yeah, so defensive end Jack Pyburn and the defensive tackle Bryson Eason. Jack Pyburn he's interesting. Like, I don't know.
Well, to Nate's point, we'll I feel like he's kind of Chennault-ish, right?
That yes.
He plays DN, he plays off ball, he's strong and, you know, whatever other stereotypes you want to put in there. And then we got our defensive tackle.
You are not dropping back in the coverage, young man. See ball, go get it.
Yeah, he's very heady, knows the playbook. And then defensive tackle-wise, we got Easton, who's probably more of like a Big Mike Pinnell, like nose tackle, run stuffer,
yes.
Kind of does the one thing very well, back up to Tonga, as obviously we kind of have our 2-3 techs now with Chris and Wood. So it is kind of interesting to see guys floating back through the same roles, looking for obviously younger, cheaper talent to be able to backfill those, and maybe guys with slightly more upside. It would be interesting to see kind of how Leo does outside of the system this year too.
I love the fact, Cole, that they are doing, I mean, this is maybe too bit on the nose, but they are doing a very like, well, what if we got players who might be stereotypical to Mitch's point, but they fit us perfectly and cheap. Like,
yeah,
relatively cheap. And like anything we get out of them is kind of a bonus and like doesn't really mess up our salary cap this year and moving forward. And congratulations. And I always think this is kind of like the cruel part of the business. I mean, there's several layers of it that is like extremely cruel. But for Marcus Harris, what I gotta do? Well, to do. I was out here dominating for long stretches in the preseason. You actually played me more than you probably should have because, again, their depth was somewhat lacking at the defensive tackle spot beyond Kyrus Tonga. But, hey, I did my job. And one of the best parts and one of the most grimiest parts of the business is, well, you see, everybody else has already made their waiver claims. Like, we don't have there's not a second-day waiver wire market. So, come on back. You made the team. But, like, did you see that guy? I also loved one of the comments from Vols Kansas City. Did the Chiefs grab Tyler just a bit lame? Get it off. Sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, it wasn't the lawsuit at all. It was more Lane Kiffin specific, but people can go read that, which I think is fun. Just the idea of like, well, he could have gone back. Legally, he was going to go back to school to not do schoolwork, but he can now be in the NFL. And it's just
the SEC. They got people to do schoolwork for you. We had a
school
story. This is a story from Cleveland. So okay. We had a guy who we got from Ohio State, and our director of player engagement was from Michigan. And so when you get drafted, like, I don't know if it's still the rule, but at the time, like, you had to graduate. You could go do the rookie mini camp, but you couldn't be part of OTAs until like your semester was over. And so he had to go back for the rest of his semester. So the former Michigan guy who played in the NFL and was whatever was like, why do you got to go back? Like, don't they do your work for you? He's like, yeah, but like, the guy was making fun of it, and the Ohio State guy was basically just like, yeah, I mean, they do, but I just have to, that's the rule. It was just like, okay, cool. I guess that's how it works in the big schools. Yeah, Cal, you definitely do your own work, that's for sure. But you just start hearing stories of what happens at the big time schools and for players that are good. And it's kind of crazy. Like, a lot of the stuff that I assume isn't happening sounds like it's basically all happening.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who don't know, defensive end Jack Pyburn, whom the Chiefs claimed off of waivers, I don't know the extent of it, but he was involved in a lawsuit to be able to return back to college. If he just cleared waivers, he was going to go back.
Yes.
And he changed his mind. Well, Kansas City Chiefs? I don't need to go back that bad. So heck yeah, man. Rooting for him. Just a quick recap of the 53. I'm not going player by player, but offense was 3 QBs, 3 running backs, 6 wide receivers, 4 tight ends, 10 O-line. Yeah. That didn't change, but yesterday the numbers changed slightly because you now have 5 defensive ends with Jack Pyburn being added, 4 defensive tackles for now, 5 linebackers. They made a change with cornerbacks, so you got 5 corners and 5 safeties. And I will say this, I didn't stick to my guns, but when Xavier Wampa was signed as a UDFA, he was my bold, I think he makes the roster as one of the few UDFAs. He didn't make my final 53 only because I was like, well, how are you going with 5 safeties, even though you could justify it easy with Alohi Gilman dealing with the low back, Chamari Connor with the knee. All that to say, I was very happy to see Xavier Wampa made it. Always rooting for an underdog story, probably playing a ton of teams early, but he was working in with the first team defense, Alohi Gilman's back spasmed during pregame warmups week 2.
And they didn't have anything that looked super mental errors to the naked eye, to the regular fan. So even though he got elevated in a way that is not usual, still performed well, still pretty good tackler. He's known for his physicality. It appears that they like him in the room. So I like the idea that even though the Chiefs don't have as good of a collection of DBs as we've seen recently, they're still having plenty of guys who are capable of doing the job. And I think that's one of the things that I know they're still processing with I want them to let go. It's okay, Dave Merrick. It's going to be fine. There's no way Jayden Hicks is making the same mistakes. No, he's got it all figured out. But to Mitch's point about special teams, it appears clear now that from a Steve Spagnuolo, Dave Merritt standpoint, if you're in the secondary, we need you to be buttoned up. No major mistakes. Doesn't matter where you're positioned at. And he's so disciplined, and he didn't look like he was playing tentatively, even though he's an undrafted rookie, that, yeah, I applaud the Chiefs for identifying that player and getting him to play pretty reasonably well, considering the fact that he got maybe more snaps than the Chiefs expected because of the injuries at the safety position.
Isn't it six corners?
Technically, yes. I mean, it's what you want to do with Christian Roland Wallace, basically. Yeah, some people think he's a safety. Some people think he's a corner. Some people think he's a nickel. He's basically he's anything but a outside corner, I guess.
I technically had him as a safety, even though he's playing slot, but he has safety flex. The Chiefs roster is funny because it's like DB, CB, safety. But then, like, for example, like Nazi Johnson was a safety on the Chiefs roster his entire 4 years here, and he was never playing safety.
Never.
But yeah, when you say five corners, I'm like, eh, that's not enough.
Yeah, so real quick, because I wanted to ask your thoughts on this, actually, because the five corners I put on there were Delaney, Noel Williams, Snead, Fulton, Kennedy, then the five safeties, Gilman, Hicks, Connor, CRW, Wampa. But it looks like CRW is kind of your go-to slot guy right now. However, we saw Snead working in pretty early on at the nickel as well in this preseason finale. So I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on, because Kader Kohou didn't make it. I wasn't really surprised by that because he was playing like in the fourth quarter in the preseason finale, but he was one of your potential slot options. Well, now you have CRW, then maybe Snead. Obviously, Jaden Kennedy played that in college. Doesn't seem exactly maybe ready to put out there quickly on defense. I guess we'll see there. But and then Chamari Connor can do that in a pinch as well. But any takeaways you guys have, maybe even Mitch first on the construction right now of the secondary and how that's shaping up?
I think the ideal thing with Snead is he's such an effective blitzer that getting him a little closer to the box and being able to play nickel and blitz from that position and being effective and physical and all those things is hugely beneficial to what Spags likes to do. Especially as, you know, teams are, they're getting under center and, you know, ways to kind of blow up under center plays where you're throwing guys from that position at the ball where a receiver can't really cut the guy off because the angle is too extreme, but the O-line like doesn't see it or doesn't account for it. And you're able to kind of knife in and make things happen. Now, is that benefit going to be stronger than, you know, potentially him playing quasi at a position there? If that's probably more matchup specific, right? If you're going against a smaller, twitchy guy, I don't know that that's his best role at this point in his career. You'd like him to be physical and play press and get his hands on guys. But being able to, you know, play him in that spot and blitz and still be, you know, effective enough in the pass defense would be awesome. I feel like you said, I mean, we drafted Kennedy to kind of be in that role, and he showed great promise in college, being physical, tackling, blitzing, all those things. Doesn't seem like that's ready yet. So having trust in guys to play different spots, I feel like that was kind of what the pitch was when, you know, we let McDuffie go and let Watson go, that, you know, we've said it, Delaney is able to play different schemes, maybe at a higher level across the board at all those than the guys we previously had, and then having some flexibility to interchange guys and to find the right blitz threats. Because, I mean, Spags gets all the stuff for, like, well, like cover zero and the third down blitzes, but, like, his more effective blitzes are the first and second down run blitzes, especially in the playoff games. We, you know, go up against all these teams and all of a sudden run games get totally shut down. Is it because our D-line is dominating in a way they don't in the regular season? Not really. It's more schematics and more what Spags is able to do and deploying corner and slot blitzes. So that's, I think, what you're kind of hoping for, and to not have to, you know, feel like you need to have guys in the box at all times, and just make it a little bit easier. And then, again, if you're effective with certain blitzes, then teams take run plays off the table. Like, you go into a week, you need to have an answer for any blitz that a defense can throw at you. And so if a team is throwing blitzes at you that don't work with the formation and the run scheme that you want, like, that's a win before the game even starts if they just can't run that play. So that's another wrinkle of, like, what a versatile, you know, slot corner can do when the defensive coordinator can utilize them correctly.
Let's talk trenches just for a second, because it's been a week since we've chat. Well, we haven't talked since the preseason finale, but R. Mason Thomas flashed again. a couple different times, which is great. Ash and Gelati, do you have any idea if you had to guess if he would be ready? I know he ruptured his plantar fascia, so my expectation is if he is, he's not going to be quite right. But I still feel good, even if that's the case. George Karloftis, Felix. I mean, you got Pyburn, I don't know. But Armason Thomas, then you could elevate Ogba maybe.
Yeah.
It's still a little thin, but again, if Felix can show some shades of what he showed in the preseason a bit more regularly, as well as RMT, how do you guys kind of feel about that? Obviously combined with the interior, Chris Jones, Peter Woods, Tonga, who Peter Woods, I feel like is getting better. I know he's not flashing a ton in these preseason games, but he looks like he's kind of settling into his role that they've used him in so far, and he's getting a bit more just productive. And maybe it's always not rushing the passer, but even some of the run aspect of the D-line too.
Yeah, I think it's clear that Peter Woods was still dealing with the ankle injury in the preseason opener, but he's, you know, talking to him after the game on Friday, he seems so more confident and sure of himself that, like, yep, I know exactly what I can do in terms of, like, you know, moving my body on stretch plays, you know, as that backside defender, or, you know, sort of knifing through, you know, in terms of whether the play's, you know, towards me or not. You know, we haven't necessarily had to see him in true pass rushing situations, which I actually think is a benefit to the Chiefs, because there's really no tape of that, and there's no tape of him next to Chris Jones. So, like, what can you really go off of on a, you know, plausible third down coming up in a couple weeks? I don't care who it is. I'm just of the opinion that speed is speed. And so the Chiefs already have a better front than what the Denver Broncos saw last year. And that is including Felix Anadike Uzomah, just because he's supposed to be a true NFL player now. Like, you know exactly who you are. You've had all this time leading up to the season. You know it's a chance for you to have a bit of a, you know, bigger impact than you did when it was in your first or second year, when there was a more, I think, established rotation. And then, yeah, I mean, R. Mason, just, he good. Like, it's amazing to know that, like, and I think this is where the preseason does get fun, where if you're like, hey, we have, like, top one, top two picks, man, it should look like it's easy out there for them. And it looks at times really easy for R. Mason, and it looked extremely easy for Mansoor Delane, to where, you know, all the concerns we had about him and his shoulder, man, that dissipated immediately. So I like where the pass rush is. You know, we will learn more about Ash and Gelati kind of in the same time frame about Josh Simmons. Like, hey,
next week,
are you participating in any stretch, you know, on that September 10th, 11th, 12th stretch of practice week? Of course, we'd have an injury report at that point. So one would assume that if he is out there, it would be an unlimited participation, just to, like, make sure, like, his foot doesn't, you know, flare up, or it's not like some sort of a setback. But yeah, I just think at least the Chiefs plan has legitimacy behind it before the Denver Broncos see it for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, the defense is better than last year, kind of off the jump, even though we're talking about all these young guys and new faces and rework secondary. But, like, the defensive line is the thing that runs most defenses. So if that's improved, which I think it is, and I think we all agree with that, the defense should be better. And then it is going to improve, you know, tremendously throughout the season as the young guys play more, get more comfortable. Spags kind of learns the right deployments and all that stuff. So I think there's a world where it starts out as, you know, a solid or good defense, and then can grow as the season progresses. And the season-long numbers might not, you know, look as great, but you get to December and it's like, huh, maybe this is like a top eight defense, because you finally have three or four legit rushing threats. And, you know, you've got, you know, cover guys who are now comfortable and flexible and can run all the blitzes and the schemes and the disguises. So, yeah, there's a lot to like. You know, I think we probably still agree the linebackers are maybe the worst part of the three levels, and we'll see what Jalen Waddle does over the middle in week one. That's something that I think we'll probably spotlight a little bit more next week.
He can't get off the feet. He can't get off the, I mean, we saw this before. He can't get off the line of scrimmage if Snead's just assaulting him between 5 yards, 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. Like, I think that's why Snead should play the nickel, is because, I mean, they can't call it on every play. I mean, that was half a Snead strategy anyway. I mean, you're not going to call that, right? Like, this is football. So I do like the fact that they're going to get tested in the middle of the field. That's always been the case. I think that's where Brian Cook was really underrated last year. But, yeah, the defense should be better. And it really depends on, like, the durability, the stamina, and the overall smarts of Nick Bolton and Drew Tranquil. Like, those two guys have to be on a string, and they have to be dependable, and they have to stay healthy. Like if you could tell me, Nate, we can guarantee you that Nick Bolton and Drew Tranquil are going to play 15, 16, 17 games, I would tend to agree that, like, this defense will get to top 10 by season's end, because the athleticism, the speed, the physicality, like, all those things are starting to demonstrate itself in the preseason. And with a pretty good coaching staff intact, it should, you know, develop and blossom in front of us, especially in the second half of the season. The only weakness, and I think the Chiefs knew this too, the only weakness they have is linebacker depth. If they had better depth like they do at defensive line, or, hey, the number of interchangeable possibilities in the secondary, then I would say, hey, this defense is really ready to, like, take off. But they need Bolton and they need Drew Tranquil to be the pillars so that everything else can really elevate itself.
You know what's crazy is we're so excited about, like, the speed and burst of R. Mason, and, you know, seeing that from Woods a little bit. Obviously, there's, like, the excitement factor of Delane. If this team ever gets linebackers that are fast, like, we as fans are going to lose our minds. You know, whenever that kind of happens and the linebacker room turns over and we get guys with, like, legit NFL speed, it's going to be really exciting. And just, like, because you see what that does at, like,
yes,
the defensive end position. And
yeah,
we just haven't seen that at the linebacker position. And obviously, there's way more that goes into it. That position in general, guys take until years 3, 4, 5 to develop. Like, it's challenging, all that stuff. But, like, man, there's a world where, like, eventually we start, you know, finding one or two of these guys and developing them. And just hard to not be excited about speed.
100%. And that's obviously fans will go back and forth all day about Nick Bolton and stuff. We know he has the strengths, but we also know he has his limitations, especially in coverage at times. This is just like a preview light of the Broncos game for anybody wondering, because there's 2 points of our 4 about the Broncos in our talk show list. But yeah, so when you're talking about concerns about the Chiefs O-line and just the unknowns, I will say the D-line of the Broncos has taken a hit. You know, you lost somebody in free agency, John Franklin Myers, but then Jonathan Cooper, he is currently on the commissioner's exempt list. He's dealing with off the field legal situation. He recently pled not guilty to assault, the initial allegations, and his trial is set for November. But yes, in the meantime, he's on the commissioner's exempt list, not playing week 1. So sure, there's a little bit, I guess, of a silver lining there if you had to play sans Josh Simmons, yeah, even though they still have other guys, and they're for sure going to probably, to some extent, single out whoever is on the opposite side of Jalen Moore, even though he's susceptible at times too. But yes, it is a bit of an offset. However, I would really like Simmons to play if his body is physically able to. But yeah, the Broncos, that is your hardest game before the bye week. It's a very important one for the division. They won the division last year. You're playing 4 of your 6 AFC West games by week 8, including both against the Broncos. So week 1, oof, Arrowhead, very important matchup right out the gate.
I love the idea that the Broncos are kind of going to be forced to blitz Mahomes more than usual, because they have to test the offensive line and Mahomes' mobility, and because they might not have, as we presume, they won't have Jonathan Cooper, so their defensive line may not be as much of a strength as it was a year ago. And I love the idea that I don't know what Spags is going to do, but it's not going to be playing safe probably on opening day, because in some ways, I would say Steve Spagnuolo's got to be encouraged to blitz, because where's Bo Nix with his ankle injury? And we saw Bo Nix a little bit in the preseason, so you have an idea. But, like, can you get the ball to Jaylen Waddle or Courtland Sutton if your quarterback's, you know, scrambling all the time with maybe more speed, more juice from the defense? This might be a more blitz-heavy opening night game than I could have remembered, because last year, I think the crazy thing was, like, the Chargers didn't blitz a ton, kind of stayed in front of everybody. No, that was a Travis Kelce, Xavier Worthy issue. But the Chiefs blitzed a lot of linebackers because they realized rather quickly, we can't get to just her with just four. And so there was a clear, like, ooh, you can see who has the advantage in the trenches through, like, the first two quarters, and now things are adjusting a certain way, where I think both teams may have to be aggressive in terms of defense and then adjust from there based on how both quarterbacks and offenses operate.
Mitch, heading into week one, the uncertainty as a player and how you guys game plan and prep, what does that kind of look like? And you don't have to, I know we're kind of over time, so if you don't have a lot of time, it's totally fine. But all that to say, Spags was saying under the impression that they were going to be doing one thing and they did another, because it's week one. So you mm-hmm. have film, you have thoughts, you have ideas of what they could be coming out there and doing. But obviously, is it a lot of reacting in real time on the sidelines based on what's being presented? Or how do you kind of get ready for a week one game with no real film on the current team that you're about to play this season?
Ideally, it's a staff that is the same, and it's a coordinator that, you know, you've got a history of playing. I mean, for the most part, you're going up against guys that you've seen in one way or another. Even if they're a new coordinator who has never done it, like, you'll still go, okay, well, he coached under that guy who's this tree, and we'll kind of go back, and this is what we expect. This is what their team ran last year. You know, usually you're hiring a guy from a different team. So mm-hmm. there's the indecision of that. There's also some, you know, indecision from a player perspective of, like, am I going against a rookie? Am I going against, you know, a second or third year guy? There's not much film of, like, how much do I watch preseason film of a guy? Do I kind of just go out there blind? So there definitely is a lot more, you know, kind of uncertainty that goes with those games. And that can lead to a little bit of, you know, kind of anxiety and a feeling of unpreparedness. But in general, I mean, that would be a week that you would maybe have more plays that are good versus all that aren't necessarily as scheme specific. You know, every week, every coach, but like Coach Reed's going to have his, you know, on third and 5-7, they're, you know, 48% cover two, 36%, like all those different things. Maybe we just run like this has honestly been my argument for forever. In a 2-minute drill, you kind of run the same plays all year to some degree. You've got like 10 to 12, they rotate a little bit, but like most teams have the same plays, and those kind of have to be good plays versus any coverage you can go out. Everything's yep. happening fast. Well, why don't we just run more of those good versus all plays in every situation? why does everything have to be so scheme specific? So you might see more stuff from the offensive perspective that just like good versus all, you adjust quickly if certain blitzes, as I talked about earlier, are affecting run game or protections. And you just know that like we'll see stuff that we don't see. In a perfect world, you know, you've got rules as a player, especially offensive line wise, you have specific rules on every play. The rules should take care of all the fronts, any sort of combination. And obviously, if they do something that breaks rules or that you don't have an answer for, you talk it over on the sideline, talk it over the half, and you switch. But yeah, it makes it a little bit more, you know, kind of a thinking man's game to go out there and to be able to adjust to things that you haven't had the same preparation for that you would in like a week 8 or week 15.
Real football is almost here, and I cannot wait. I mean, the season opener is next week, finally, after what has felt like an extremely long offseason, because it is. I mean, the Chiefs were eliminated from the playoffs for the first time in the Mahomes era. I mean, for the first time since when? 2014-ish? But that we knew that by mid-December, rather than the floor in the Mahomes era being the AFC Championship. So I am ready for some real football. Parting thoughts, just real quick. Remember to leave questions in the comments down below, and we will get to some of those for the Q&A. You got the like button, sub. We are on all the audio platforms as well. The stuff I'm very bad at plugging, but yes, we are everywhere. The Chiefs Collective on audio platforms and obviously here on YouTube. Do you guys have any parting thoughts, Mitch, Nate, before we get out of here?
Kind of like a boring week. Like, not really much happens. Roster's kind of set. Practice isn't really in full go. I think they get the weekend off to a degree. So just like there's the excitement of the season upcoming and kind of like, this sounds bad, but like the lack of excitement coming off the weekend, which you kind of like get excited to see how the roster is going to shake out, even though 1,000 people get cut across the league. So it's just like there's not as much like movement. There's not as much to talk about. But I think this is a good week to kind of dive into what you expect to see, as we just talked about. So, yeah, it'll be fun to kind of get into like actual season mode.
Nate, is that all from you?
That's it from me. I will keep everyone abreast at some point about the injury updates and all that too. So we'll learn more later this week. But yeah, Mitch is right. We're so close and still double digit days away.
Well, that is today's episode of the Chiefs Collective with Cole, Mitch, and Nate. And with that, we'll see y'all next time.